Welcome to the Byland Podcast. My name is Emery, and this is episode 28 with Renee from the Oregon Desert Trail. Welcome back to the Byland Podcast. My name is Emery, and this is episode 28. And I have Renee on from the Oregon Desert Trail, and I'm super excited to get this episode out to you guys because it was extremely fun talking to Renee. She is running the Oregon Desert Trail, if you've never heard about it. It's a really unique trail, and I'm going to let her talk about what it is because it's not actually a trail. It's more of a route, and we'll go into details about that. But Renee is, she knows how to backpack. She is a Triple Crown hiker of the big three trails, so long distance trails, the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail. She's done a number of things. She was one of the first people to hike the Oregon Desert Trail, and she now organizes everything around the Oregon Desert Trail. So she works for the organization. It's her. She's running the show. So, man, we go into so many different things. Talk about her backpacking experience, how she got into it, how she found her way to doing what she is doing today with the Oregon Desert Trail, and a number of other things. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode because it is super, super fun. At the end of it, I was like, whoa, we covered so much, and it kind of encapsulates the entire concept of what I'm trying to do here with Byland. So it's awesome. Before we go into the episode, I want to let you guys know there's a couple things if you want to support the podcast. You can go on to iTunes and leave me an honest review about how I'm doing. It helps me reach more people. And if you want to go the next step, I opened up a lifestyle apparel page on the website. It has some t-shirts. I'll be adding stuff to it. So those are options you can use to support the podcast. And any proceeds from those purchases of the t-shirts go towards right back into the podcast. So paying for gear and all that kind of stuff, like hosting and whatnot. So helps the podcast keep up and live for you guys. So yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. You're really going to enjoy this podcast with Renee. I was on cloud nine after we got done talking. So enjoy. Here's Renee from the Oregon Desert Trail. Let's do this. Renee, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm super stoked to have you on.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about hiking. It's the thing I love to do more than just about everything.
Well, you definitely have a full-time job, from what I understand, that's focused on trails and hiking and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate for someone who just wants to spend their time outside. That I've spent probably over a decade trying to find a job where I can get paid to do that. So I'm very lucky that I've been in this role as the Oregon Desert Trail Coordinator for the last 2.5 years. So I really am eating, breathing, sleeping, hiking all the time.
Yeah, so perfect intro. Today's episode is about the Oregon Desert Trail. It's a trail that I learned about a couple years ago. I don't even know how I found it. I think I found some sort of maybe YouTube video or something about it. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know there was this trail out there. And it was before I got interested in thru hiking. So do you want to do, you kind of introduced yourself a little bit, but do you want to do like a full introduction on who you are and what you do for the Oregon Desert Trail?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, a little bit, I'll briefly go through my background and how I got here. I started hiking on the Appalachian Trail back in 2002, just fell in love with the simplicity of life, with everything you needed on your back, the people I met. So I continued to hike over the years, many other trails, including the Triple Crown, so that Oh, wow. When I got... Yeah.
I did not know that.
I can go into detail if you want those. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to go back to the Triple Crown. I have some questions about
okay.
that.
Okay. First, I'll get to today. So it was really actually after my PCT thru hike in 2006 that I thought, how can I get paid to hike, to be outside? And then I tried a variety of different jobs, from leading wilderness therapy trips, worked as a guide, taught a lightweight backpacking course at Portland Community College. I worked for Outward Bound. I led trail crews. And all of those were very interesting and exciting jobs, but they weren't quite the right fit. So when I returned, I live in Bend, Oregon. When I returned to Bend after the Continental Divide Trail in 2015, this new trail, the Oregon Desert Trail, I had seen from the periphery, was definitely taking big steps forward, and they were trying to hire someone to become the trail coordinator and decide, now what? We've created a line on the map, and we've established some resources, but what do we do now? So that's where I came in, and I thought, well, first, I need to hike it. So I hiked the whole thing in 2016, and just spent a lot of time reflecting on all of the resources I've used on other long-distance trails, and how can I bring that to this new trail? What does southeastern Oregon need in terms of resources? And really, I just, anything and everything involving getting people out into the desert of Oregon, I've been focused on that for the last 2.5 years.
That is a wild ride. I don't know, I'm curious about the transition. Like, how did you go from, how do you know how to do that kind of stuff? I mean, the trail systems they can be very intricate, I suppose, and there's a lot that goes on. If there's listeners that don't understand long distance hiking, there's a lot that can go into it. So how did you just kind of use your previous knowledge, and how did you apply that to the ODT?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of everything that I've done, and I could not have predicted that all these random jobs that I mentioned in the outdoors would someday come into play in a position. Like, I thought I always had a really patchy, random resume. I'm also a writer and a graphic designer, and so I just thought, I'm just following my curiosity, I'm following my interests, and it turns out in this role, I'm building on all those past experiences. Even going back further to after college, I joined the Peace Corps. So I was in Burkina Faso, West Africa, and I did a lot in my 2 years there around community development. And so I'm doing those same types of activities with community development in these small Eastern Oregon communities, like really trying to integrate in these communities, find people who are interested in the route, who want to support the trail, support hikers. And I just spent a lot of time meeting people and having conversations. So it's, again, like, how could I have known that in the, 20 years ago almost in Africa, I would be able to draw on those skills?
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's funny how things work out.
It is. And I think it's also, there's a lot I didn't know. I didn't know a lot of how trails are managed or created from the land management side, from working with agencies. There's a lot I didn't know about conservation. So the Oregon Desert Trail is created by a conservation organization, and they've been working for 30 years to protect landscapes in eastern Oregon. So this is the first time I'm working for a conservation nonprofit. So there was a lot to learn there about what do these things mean and how do you do this work? I like learning, so yeah. I think it's been exciting to sort of ramp up my skills, be challenged, figure out how to meet this challenge, and get out there and help others enjoy. Really, the core of the project is, let's get people in this really unknown landscape. Southeastern Oregon is very remote, some of the most remote country left in the world, or not the world. The country.
Yeah.
There are not many roads, so it's hard to get out there.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, well, so it's kind of, when I started doing the research, a little bit of research on that area of Oregon, I remember the thing that stuck out to me was, it's kind of an untapped area of Oregon. Like, it's just, from what I understand, you'd have to correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not a whole lot out there in terms of, like, industry and, like, infrastructure. But for nature-wise, and for people that are looking to travel through the backcountry, there's a lot to offer.
Definitely. Yeah, there's It's been historically ranching communities, but this high desert landscape, it doesn't sustain large animals. It's a high desert, and there's areas that go up to over 9,000 feet along the route. So there's definitely these remote mountain ranges. It's very rugged terrain. The last 200 miles are in the Owyhee Canyon, which has been referred to as Oregon's Grand Canyon. So it starts out as a little flat canyon, and then turns out there are these 1,000-foot cliffs, and people raft this river, and it's hard to get to because there's no real paved roads. One paved road crosses 2.5 million acres. So you have to time it right to get there when you can actually drive into these places and know where you're going, because if you need help, it's pretty far away. A big part of my job is trying to figure out how to make it more approachable and how to help hikers figure out how to be safe out there in those areas.
Well, because you mentioned you sent me a video link to the trail. Like, I can't remember who hosted the video, but I know you were in it from what I remember. And it's not a single path trail. There is a lot of, this is a very unique trail when compared to previous trails that you've done, such as like the AT, CDT, PCT. I mean, it is not your average trail. Do you want to can you do a comparison between what the Oregon Desert Trail is compared to other ones that people might know of?
Sure. I definitely try not to call it a trail that much, even though it's in the name. I definitely refer to it as a route.
Okay.
So it's a combination of trail, cross-country hiking, and dirt roads. And I liken it to what I experienced on the Continental Divide Trail a few years ago. There's definitely huge efforts being made to complete the Continental Divide Trail and sign it, but there were definitely long stretches where I was walking on two-track roads, walking without symbols to follow. So it's something that demands more presence in a hiker to stay found, to know where you are. But it also, when there's no one defined way, you look at the landscape and you try to find what are the interesting places I might want to see. So I might want to climb that hill and watch the sunset. And once you know how to read a topo map and read the terrain, you make little side trips and you figure out, oh, I can connect back here to this route, or this looks like an easier way, or I'm starving, I want to get to town, I'm going to go the shortest way possible. So yeah, it's a really freeing type of hiking experience when you have the skills to go off a single track trail and be successful.
I want to dial back to how you got into this backpacking. You mentioned briefly that you had hiked the Triple Crown, and that is a major achievement. I mean, that is a lot of miles. That is a lot of dedication. No one just accidentally hikes the Triple Crown of long distance trails. What got you into long distance hiking or backpacking in the first place?
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't grow up hiking or camping. So it's odd. I can't go back and say, well, I went hiking with my folks, but what I did grow up in was a rural setting in central Wisconsin. So I spent a ton of time outside and I felt really comfortable outside. And it was while I was in the Peace Corps after college that I read a book about a woman who hiked the Appalachian Trail. And that was the first time I had ever heard of long-distance hiking. I had ever heard of the Appalachian Trail. And something about the idea of walking across 14 states under your own power really captivated me. And I decided, even though I read this book probably in the first month I was in my village, so in 2 years, when I finish with this service, I'm going to go hike the AT. So I sort of had 2 years of thinking and planning and trying to read other hiking books where I was really captivated by this idea of long-distance backpacking. So that in 2002, when I finally got on the Appalachian Trail, I started with huge pack, tons of weight. I had really no idea what I was doing gear-wise, But I just loved the simplicity, the like I said, the people I met out there, just that I was able to walk every day and cross the country. It was pretty amazing to me. And that started it all. And I didn't, even after I finished the AT, I didn't intend to hike the Triple Crown. I just wanted to keep hiking. So after the AT, I ended up going to grad school in England, and I hiked a long-distance trail in Scotland called the West Highland Way.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my first solo hike. And I thought, this is great. It was a short one, like 100 miles. And then I just kept going. So I found myself after grad school in Portland, in Oregon, and had a job as a graphic designer. But I realized, hey, the next big trail is right outside of Portland, the Pacific Crest Trail. Maybe I should do this next. I wasn't, it wasn't planned, but I jumped on the opportunity. So I did that hike in 2006, and I started that solo. And I love the freedom of hiking by myself, but I also really enjoyed being able to meet other people and join up with groups. And some of the best friends I have to this day are hikers I met 14 years ago, or however many, 16 years ago.
Wow.
I can't do the math. 12 years ago.
It doesn't matter.
Right. But then I kept going. So then I wanted to try again to get paid to hike. So I moved to Colorado and led trail crews out of Durango. And after I finished that season, I thought, hey, look, the Colorado Trail's right here. So I hiked the Colorado Trail. And then I moved to Bend to lead wilderness therapy trips. And you have this very flexible schedule. And in fact, another hiker I had met on the PCT, Jack Haskell, who now works for the PCTA, he had started working in wilderness therapy in Utah. And he thought, hey, if you're trying to work outside, you should try this out. So that's what brought me to Bend 10 years ago, and I did that. But on a break, I went and hiked the Arizona Trail. But what was unique about that trip was this was 2009, so it was before the trail was really a trail from start to finish. It was much more like what the Oregon Desert Trail is now. I had cross-country sections, I had dirt roads, I had unmarked sections, so I had to really pay a lot of attention and figure it out. So I really stretched my skills on that trip, which was fantastic. But then when I was maybe about 2 weeks in, I was in Oracle, Arizona, and I picked up a newspaper and saw that President Obama had designated the Arizona Trail as a National Scenic Trail. So I was on the trail, and I saw that it was designated, and that was just pretty pivotal. It was just a really cool experience to be out there. And now it's such an amazing trail system, and the organization has done such a great job at establishing this. I was able to kind of see where it came from and where it can go. So that was a little bit of perspective into how a trail develops.
What's it like going one? Okay, I picked up on something you said. You're like, yeah, I hiked the AT, and then I moved to Scotland. I think you went from AT, then you went to grad school to Scotland, and you hiked the West Highland Way, and which is 100 miles, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about
like,
100.
You're like, yeah, it's a pretty short one. It's 100 miles. And I think fellow thru-hikers are going to be like, yeah, it's a pretty short one, right? But then there's going to be this group of people that are going to hear this podcast and be like, are you freaking kidding me? 100 miles is not a short one. Like, they can't they can't fathom it. And one of the cool things about thru-hiking is that you learn that 100 miles actually is a short one. I mean, because it no longer becomes like you're not attached to this number. I want to know, when you went from the AT to another big trail like the PCT, and then you went on to do the Continental Divide Trail, every time that you stepped off on a new trail after putting thousands of miles behind you, do you remember what it was like stepping off for the first time again when compared to like the first time you stepped off on the AT?
Sure. It's kind of, when you start a new trail, it's almost after having hiked, it's a sense of relief. Mm-hmm. I found when I finally got out on the Continental Divide Trail in 2015, it was just a big sigh. I felt like, in a way, I was coming home. I was coming to something that I knew really well.
Yeah.
And I think part of what I really enjoy about 4 or 5 month trips, you have the your body has the opportunity to really thrive too.
Yeah.
I get so strong. I feel like I become a machine after about a month, and
mm-hmm.
you really can't know what that feels like until you spend a month hiking. And then after that first month, you're in amazing shape to go hike another month and another month.
Yeah.
And it definitely takes the time. I call it deep time. When you're out there, it's hard to recreate, and it's hard to get from a weekend or a week. A week is just, it's great. I love it if I have a week to go hiking, but it's usually not enough mentally.
Yeah.
I'm just getting into the rhythm. And there's also, every time I start a new trail, there's a small sense of worry, like I'm this many years older, I've had this happen to my knees or my
mm-hmm.
feet, can my body take another 2,000-mile trail? So there's definitely sometimes some doubt every time I'm starting. But again, it's more a sense of relief and just freedom. The fact that I put all my bills on bill pay, I quit my job, you know, it's just such a sense of getting on the airplane to go to a trail. It's like, whoa, I am truly free in this moment.
Yeah, I when I was ending my hike last summer, I thought to myself, if I ever did another trail, what would it feel like going returning to a terminus, or going like staring down the barrel of a long hike? And I have to believe that the things that you learned on your first hike, like it's like, I would imagine it's like riding a bike. Like you're right back in that mindset, and those nerves that you might have. Like I remember being a little nervous, like when you have the stretch between this town and that town at the beginning of the trail, and there's a point to where those nerves go away and you're like, cool, I'm looking forward to this stretch now. Like I'm looking forward to what's between here and there, versus like being afraid of like what might happen between the two,
sure.
Between the two towns. And I don't know if you felt the same thing, but now I'm kind of really curious, what would my mindset be? What would happen to my body if I ever kicked off another long trail? And I would imagine that the more you hike, the more just familiar you get, because you're out there for so many months.
Yeah, and I also think it's an addiction. So
yeah.
You have to feed the addiction and get out there again, one, to recapture that feeling of,
yeah.
of freedom, that feeling of strength, but also discovery.
Yeah.
I truly feel like I'm on an adventure, and sometimes I think until I walk through a landscape, I'm not really experiencing it. It's almost
yeah.
a blank spot on the map for at least me. And so even when I'm preparing to hike, the CDT has so many challenges. And even though I think I came to it knowing how to deal with a lot of those challenges and having the experience to make good decisions, I also didn't want to know so much about it that I wasn't discovering this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some folks who pore over, you know, all the movies, all the journals, and I love to read journals, but
mm-hmm.
I kind of want to leave some of that surprise and some of that adventure by not knowing and figuring it out when I'm there.
Yeah, but I mean, you've worked up to that, because I think there's a lot of people that start out like that, and they crave they need that safety net of what is around the next corner, what is in the next town. And you're to the point now where you don't necessarily need to know. You're so confident now that you're like, cool, I'm reliant on myself to make the right decision. And it takes everyone, I would imagine everyone has a different time frame, however long that takes to get to that point. But that bleeds into so many other areas of life. Have you noticed that, like, that self-reliance, like, bleed over into everyday life?
Oh, definitely. I mean, even in friendships or my relationship with my boyfriend, we're both very independent people. And it's like, I need, like, that independence I have on the trail, I need
mm-hmm.
that in life, too. And sometimes I just go on my own weekend. It's like,
yeah.
you do your thing, I'll do mine. And two, loving that solitude in nature, I really feel a stronger... I mean, I love hiking with people and I love my trail family, but I really enjoy being immersed in like quiet and solitude and just observing things around me. And I think, yeah, that plays out in a lot of different ways. Definitely with the challenges too, like when you take on the challenge of trying to get to Canada before it snows and all these other aspects, there's a lot of unknown. But taking that into life off trail, I'm not afraid to take on challenges because mm-hmm. I guess the trail has taught me that I can, you know, you can take these on and you can achieve, you know, get to the other end and you are stronger for it. So I kind of welcome new ways to challenge myself, either on trail or with a route, mm-hmm. finding, with carrying water for longer distances, in a variety of ways. It makes life more interesting, I think.
So how does the Oregon Desert Trail, but it's a route. Has that kind of just have us? I feel like you've kind of graduated towards this this trail that you very clearly stated it may be a trail in the name, but it is route. Like you can choose your own route. And I think a lot of people might be like, oh, that sounds, what do you mean? There's no actual trail. It's a general direction you want to go in. And you're sitting there talking about, you enjoy this freedom of the trail. And here you have this Oregon Desert route, if you will, and you can choose your own route and you can choose if you want to go over this mountain or that mountain. Has that just been a nice gradual, like, it feels like that this, what you're doing now makes sense from where you've come from. It sounds like it matches so well with you.
Yeah, I definitely think it's just been wild to see, you know, my skills develop with the more that I hike, and then my ability to use all that experience in something like this route. And there are a lot of other hikers like myself out there. A lot of the hikers who have completed the trail are also Triple Crowners or who have spent extended time in the backcountry. And they're excited by something that's not defined. You don't have to walk by every blaze to be considered, you know, a thru hiker. You don't have to, you know, the rules are much looser. And instead of hiking every foot of a trail, it's, I say, a continuous path. And I like to encourage people to get out there in other ways. So I'm a pretty big pack rafter. For the last 6 years, I've really spent a lot of time going out on primarily desert rivers, hiking in, pack rafting or boating out. And again, that's helped my route finding tremendously when I'm looking at a map and I say, this looks like a very cool place to go. Let's see if we can go paddle it. And then we have to manage to figure out how to get ourselves in there. And then if the water's too low or too big, we have to walk around it. So that's been great for developing my skills. But then I'm looking at the Oregon Desert Trail, and I see there's three rivers people could paddle. So I'm calling those water alternates. And in fact, I paddled or pack rafted 140 miles of the Oregon Desert Trail in the Owyhee River.
Oh, wow.
And there's other sections, those dirt roads you could bike. So there's sections you could bike for big chunks. And I think long term, I'd love to find ways to connect those roads so you could have almost a parallel bike route. Then there's skiing. We had an incredibly high snow year last year in Oregon, and you could have essentially skied the whole route. We actually had a hiker come out and snowshoe the first 200 miles. So it's like that's a totally different skill set, mm-hmm. traveling in the winter on skis, but you can do it. And it's really about experiencing this landscape and what way works for you. Is it on horseback? Is it on a bike? Is it hiking? And so it's really opening up this experience to other forms of travel, quiet recreation, so you can get a real taste for what this desert landscape's like.
You're describing all these different methods of travel through the region. Public lands are a hot topic. Everyone's concerned about all those things. But as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking, I remember seeing signs on the PCT being like, do not leave this trail. This is private land. This is like, you know, you cannot camp here, blah, blah, blah. What's the situation around that desert area that the trail goes through, and how is the organization managing the access to that land?
Yeah, so the route is most of it is on big tracts of public land. So there's a lot of flexibility with where you go. And I mark very clearly on the maps where the private land is so that hikers know where they can explore and where they shouldn't. But it is, it's can be challenging in some places because there are a lot of fences out in public land, and those are primarily for grazing cattle, and there are grazing allotments on public land. So just because you're hiking in this area and you've come across a fence, it doesn't mean it's private, and you are actually, it is within your right to cross it over, under, however you can best get over it. And then there are private land parcels that are not fenced. So it's pretty important to be aware of where you are in relation to those pieces of private land. But again, you would try to mark it. And then a lot of what I've been doing is meeting with those landowners. So I've been, I spend time meeting with the ranchers and meeting with folks who own land along the route, just to be totally transparent and tell them about, you know, what this Oregon Desert Trail is, the type of people who want to walk 750 miles in the desert. A lot of folks think I'm crazy, and we're crazy, but they also have a deep appreciation and love of the landscape. So that's something that we often share, even though they would never go hike 200 miles. They understand why we might want to.
Yeah.
So it's meeting people with respect. It's meeting people and just listening to each other. And even though we might have different ideas on how some of these lands should be managed, at the end, it's about respect. We're respecting their lifestyle, their cattle. We're trying not to start stampedes, or we're trying not to, you know, degrade their land. And we actually rely a lot on the water sources that have been developed for cattle. So, and they, you know, will respect that we're not homeless hippies. We're just people who like to go adventure and do it under our own power. So
it's so funny you say that, because it's like you got a rancher on the right and, you know, this what looks to be like a wandering hippie on the left, and you're like, hey man, do you mind if I pass through your land? And like, it's such a, it's just, it's got to be such a comical scene sometimes when you're like, no, I promise, like, you know, they have so much in common. Like you said, I mean, these two groups of people here, you have the landowners that love that land, and you also have the people that just want to enjoy that land and totally respect it and treat it like it's their own. I can't imagine being in your shoes and trying to build that bridge. And but it sounds like it's really working, and you're finding a way to make that happen and keep it really healthy.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I was nervous about the prospect at first, but the more and more I meet with people and sit down, I realize we have a lot in common, and then these people are turning into trail angels.
Yeah.
So we're really creating a culture around long-distance hiking in a place that would never have considered long-distance trails or hiking before. And every time I make a lot of visits out to the small communities, just this last month, I probably had 10 different people in different communities come forward and say they want to support hikers and support the trail. So those are people that might offer you a cold water or a shower or a bed or a meal. And so it's amazing to see the support that's developing out of these positive and respectful interactions.
That is super cool, man. Okay, so to someone that is listening to the podcast, it's like, hey, I might want to check out the Oregon Desert Trail or the region. Where do you begin? I mean, there's a lot that you have to undertake. I mean, there's not a lot of water on the route, from what I understand. Clearly, it's a desert. There's not a trail, so you have to discover your route. How does someone go about planning? What can they expect? How do they plan a route through the Oregon Desert Trail?
Yeah, so a good place to start is our website, onda.org/Oregon Desert Trail. So all of the resources that we have and we've created are on there. They're all free. And really the goal, like I said, is to get more people out there. So the way that I've developed the resources, and I keep adding to it all the time. So we have a map set, we have a guidebook, we have waypoints and a track, we have a data book and water chart, there's a town guide, there are some trail registers out there. So it's really, and they're all to be used together to find out, okay, where's the water, how many miles between this water source and the next, similar to a data book you might have used on the Pacific Crest Trail. Mm-hmm. And then the guidebook is a narrative description of the route. And so we do, because we do have waypoints, there is a track or a path you can follow. And we actually do tie into several trail systems. So there's, I think the number is 11% of the 750 miles is trail. So there is some trail.
Right.
We start in the Badlands Wilderness, which has 9 miles of trail. And our longest section is a 60-mile section that ties into the Fremont National Recreation Trail. So there you can go out and hike for a week and be on trail and mm-hmm. be in the vicinity of the more challenging sections, but have an easier time of it. And then once you spend time on that section, maybe you would consider the next section. It's got more challenge. You're navigating. You're going between different dirt roads in the forest, and then you come out to this amazing, beautiful fault block mountain, Abert Rim, which is 2,500 feet above the valley below. That's a cross-country section. You're walking the edge of this huge cliff. So some of the navigation maybe isn't as intimidating as folks might think, but so the navigation isn't challenging, but the terrain is. It's this really uneven, rocky lava rock. So even though you don't have to worry about, am I going the right direction, you have to pay attention to every footstep.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a variety of challenges out there. But all the resources are there to help people figure out how to do it and how to do it safely.
Are the majority of people doing it in sections? Is this kind of like a section style trail, or are people going at it like you did, like, hey, I'm going to through hike this route? What's the most popular choice there? Because it sounds like it's kind of like one of those build your own ending stories. Like, you can kind of do however you want. Like, it's really there to, like, there's all these options. You can hike on a trail. You can hike across a desert. You can raft. You can bike. You can do all these things.
Yeah, I think definitely if you think of sections as going out for a weekend or a week, we've had far more people do that. I'm guessing around 200 folks last year do small chunks. Mm-hmm. As for section hiking, I actually, in 2016, I section hiked the whole trail. So I went out 5 different times, about 2 weeks to a day each time, hiking chunks or pack rafting. So there's only been a couple of us to do it in that way within one calendar year.
Yeah.
There's been 17 people total who have completed the route. So most of those have been, like I said, very experienced backpackers. In fact, we had two of our fall hikers last year, trail names Virgo and Dirtmonger. They've hiked the CDT and the PCT. Dirtmonger is actually out right now hiking from Mexico to Canada on the Desert Trail, which is a desert route that parallels the PCT through the desert. This is a route created in the 80s. And we actually, the Oregon Desert Trail, tied into a small section of their route. So it's really interesting. We're definitely not the first group to try to create a route like this. The ideas have been around for a long time. I think it's there's a resurgence of it. There's so many more people hiking, so many more people mm-hmm. gaining those skills, so many more people looking at getting off a single track with excitement. And, that could open the door to mm-hmm. all sorts of other adventures.
So you've been hiking for quite a while. What are you seeing? What are you seeing, like, the hiking landscape look like? You mentioned a resurgence in these different trails that may have been established for a while, but no one's been using them. And there seems to be a lot more education out there. People are learning about it, trying new things out. Where do you see, or what are your thoughts on where hiking is going and this resurgence of sorts? Or if I don't know, maybe it's not a resurgence. Maybe we just hear about it more often.
Sure. I think I'm so immersed in it that I think it's everyone knows about long distance hiking, and it's because it's been a big part of my life. But then I go visit, you know, my family in the Midwest or friends on the East Coast, and I realize I live in a very small niche community of friends that talk about hiking all the time. I definitely think technology has played a big part in getting the word out about these trails. Definitely hear some grumbling about the wild effect, getting so many more people out there. But I think it's a great thing
because
if someone discovers their love of hiking through a book, hey, I discovered my love of hiking through a book. You know, that's better. I think we'll all be a much healthier people if we spend time on these long trails. So I'm ecstatic that more people are getting out on the trails. I think it's, you know, now it's the question of how do we spread that use out? How do we become more intelligent, respectful of hiking through these areas so we're not having as much of an impact? So it's super easy now to use an app. I definitely used an app on the CDT along with my paper maps, but it was amazing how using technology took one big source of worry, or at least lessened it, the can I navigate this? Can I find the next water source? There's not much water. And so it took a little bit of that edge off, because there are all sorts of other things you're concerned about, you know, grizzlies, lightning, snow, drought. So I think technology has been a huge game changer, and I definitely think people are misusing it when they only take technology and they don't take paper. They don't know how to read a paper map. That's a big, you know, that's a skill that you can translate to so many other things. And I think hikers are doing themselves a disservice by not knowing how to read a topo map. Like the year you hiked last year, it's so much snow in the Sierra, so many fires. There had to have been times when you had to rely on either someone else's skills to get you through it, or you needed to use route finding skills to figure out how to get through the snow. What's the shortest path? How do I get up there safely?
Well, I mean, so a perfect example of that, the guy that I was hiking with, awesome dude, he was not familiar with backcountry travel off trail. And that's totally fine, right? Like a lot of people are in that boat. I'm lucky enough to have grown up hunting, and it just so happens that you don't hunt on trails, you hunt off trail. So you naturally learn about how the landscape works, topo maps. And even if I don't have like these really, really, I can't read a compass, I can't do the bearing stuff, like maybe it takes me a little while to do it, I can read a topo map so well that when we were going around these, you know, north facing slopes that were too dangerous, I would look at him and I'd be like, hey, we're going to go down here, we're going to cut over this way, and we're going to intersect the trail down here. And he would look at me like, I have to trust you because I have no idea what you're talking about. Like I had a horn grown out of my head. And and so what was interesting is that had I not been there, who knows, maybe he would have turned around, or maybe he would have gone the wrong way, or he wouldn't have the confidence, something would have happened, something like that. And here I was able to take this guy and teach him what I know based on my backcountry travel and continue on the trail. And I think, like you said, I mean, it's just, it opens up this whole new thing. If you don't have those tangible skills, and you can practice, you know, I like to build myself little barriers, like, okay, I know that this creek is my barrier, or this ridge is my barrier. And I kind of funnel myself that way. That's how I work based on my mapping skills. I don't know how anyone else does it, but yeah, those are super, super important skills to have.
Definitely. And I'll be the first to admit I learned on the trail. 2006 was a very high snow year in the Sierra, much like last year. And I did not know much about navigating. So I was with a group that took some time, and I really got, you know, looked at maps, and we talked through it. And I've definitely learned a lot from other hikers on the trail. And I think that's a natural progression. But I do think, you know, folks are going to be better prepared for being unprepared if they know how to handle, you know, no trail or having to get off the trail, having to. A trail can definitely turn into a route quickly under some circumstances.
If you don't mind, I'd like to pick your brain about what you've learned over the past however many years it's been. It's rare that you get to talk to someone who has so many thousands of miles, not only thousands of miles, but you've done a number of things. You were talking about doing outdoor therapy, and now you're running this organization. You're on the inside, you're working well with those communities, but you have a really interesting skill set, and I was hoping you could maybe give me like a quick download of like what have you learned in the last, like when it comes to backpacking, people have these barriers to entry. Like I've met so many people that are like, I want to go backpacking, but
right.
And it's that but that I'm like, but what? Like, what's the problem? And I get it because I've been there and I've met people that have been there and I've helped them ease into it. But from your perspective, after all these thousands of miles and all these things you've seen and done and like experienced, what are your thoughts on what have you learned, I guess? And I know that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a big question.
Sure. I think one of the scary things or the barriers possibly is just the time that goes into doing something this big and gear. Like, how can I possibly, I don't know what the latest tent technology is. Mm-hmm. And I love to remind myself about Grandma Gatewood, who is this old woman, one of the first women to hike the Appalachian Trail decades ago, and she did so in Keds in a canvas duffel bag. And when you really distill this experience down, you can wear so many different kinds of footwear. I've met people who like to hike barefoot. Mm-hmm. You can use any type. You can really use almost anything. A lot of my life I've been just very poor student, or just I don't come from, you know, having lots of money, so I would go to use gear sales. I think I outfitted myself for the PCT under $100 with a used pack, used hiking poles, used clothes. You can go to thrift stores. You can make your stove out of a beer can. You know, there's so many ways where money isn't necessarily have to be an obstacle. And then the time, that's a big one. So I definitely have timed my hikes to fit between like natural breaks. When I started working seasonally, for example, when my trail crew position ended in August, it was a natural break to go do a long trail. And I would encourage, you know, folks, think of those natural breaks. Like, do you have an opportunity to get out for a few weeks or a month or a couple months? Sometimes I do quit my job. Like, I gave my last job, I was working for a publishing company in Bend, I gave them a year notice. I pretty much said, I've been wanting to do this trip for a long time, and I think I can make it work in 2015. It's a year from now. And, you know, being that upfront with them, it turned out that they were some of my biggest supporters, and they were my biggest cheerleaders, and they were, like, excited to help me get ready. And so I find sort of you can help make these time periods, you know, open for yourself when you're, you know, really engaged and you involve other people with it. So that's been helpful. And I also like to say I'm taking my retirement as I go. So I'm not saving for the one day when I'll have a fat bank account and then my life will start. I'm living life now. Like, I'm not going to wait. I work, I save up a bunch of money, I spend it on a hike. I work, I save up a bunch of money, I spend it on a hike. So, because nothing's guaranteed. I mean, tomorrow's not guaranteed. Next month isn't guaranteed. There's a lot of unknowns. So not waiting for that one day, you have to make it happen.
That's, man, it's so true, right? I took a huge risk. I told my employer, I asked my employer if I could take 6 months off to hike the PCT, and they supported me and they brought me back, and it was
great.
The greatest gift, right? But you know, I had this, I guess on a personal note, like I found myself using this phrase, and I don't know if you did this as well, but I was like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And halfway through the trail, I started hating that phrase that I was using, because I'm like, I got to make the most of this trail. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. I'm never gonna have this again. And halfway through the trail, I was like, that's really sad. Like, why is this a once in a lifetime? Why does this have to be a once in a lifetime opportunity?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, Emery, great. Now you get to hike that one off for a while, right? Like, that's going to haunt me to Canada, right? And you meet all these people, and I met this guy, Big Spoon. No idea what his real name is, but I asked him when we were on the trail, like, hey, dude, why are you out here? And this is really early on. He haunted me for like thousand miles or so. And he's like, I don't know. I just, life seems more real out here. And I was like, bro, you got it all backwards. I was like, this isn't real. This is completely backwards. Like, real life is back in town with friends and family and a girlfriend or whatever you're into, you know, like that's what real life is, bills and stuff. And then finally I realized, I'm like, dude, no way. That's like Big Spoon's, this is his reality. Like, if he doesn't identify with the world that that everyone else lives in, why does he have to be, he's not wrong. He's just, that's his reality. If he wants to continue, living on long distance trails, he should do that. Like that is what he should do. And I was like, man, maybe Big Spoon had it right.
Yeah, I think I've gotten to where a lot of my friends are those serial hikers, and they're out every year or every other year, and it has become their real life. And that living in a city and having a real-time job, that is really difficult, and that is the challenge. It's not getting out on the trail. It definitely depends on how you look at it, and I think we all have different reasons for being out there and different styles, and there's room for everyone to have, you know, those perspectives, and yeah, it will, you know, hopefully change, and hopefully it won't be once in a lifetime for you if you don't want it to be, but respecting, other people might not see it the way you do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I enjoy my time out there. I see the trail as my vacation. Mm-hmm. So I take a French press mug. I'm drinking good coffee. I sleep on a pillow. I carry books. I'm not an ultralight hiker. I have some ultralight items in my pack so that I can carry more of other things that I like to have. And it's just, we all have slightly different ways, and there's no one right and wrong. You get time to discover your style and what really, where your happy place is when you do hike more than one trail. And it's constantly being reevaluated. I mean, there's new gear, there's new things all the time. Like, my gear list changes every single hike, and there's no, I like the freedom and the flexibility to just switch things out. And now if you can sit in your tent and order a new pack online and have it sit to the next town, there's so much freedom. I mean, you might start the trail with one set of gear and then a couple hundred miles have a totally different setup. And that's the flexibility we have these days, which is pretty cool. Mm.
I think a lot of people are afraid to try new things out. And I think through hikers are so lucky in that they get, it's Groundhog's Day, right? They can try something different every week. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, that's cool too. Like, okay, I'll go back to what worked. And a lot of people don't get those reps in. They don't get the, like, I think of all the reps that I'm not getting in by not backpacking right now. And because every time I would do a stretch of trail, it was, you learn something new every single time. Like, you can play with like your food, you can play with your stride, your gear, you're constantly fidgeting with things. And like you said, there's no right or wrong way to do it. There's probably better ways than others, but everyone has their own style. And when people ask me, hey, what's some gear suggestions? I'm like, it depends on what you want, man. Like, what are you wanting? Are you wanting a long distance hike? Are you wanting, like you mentioned, bringing books and like nice coffee? Like some people love that, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's just, what do you love? Like, what do you love? You know?
Yeah. It's, I remember on the CDT, I was in Montana a couple hundred miles from the end, and I'm a big fan of naps. So mm-hmm. taking a nap by the side of the trail after lunch, and these two hikers I hadn't met before, they must have been, you know, behind me for most of the route, came up, and they're like, what are you doing napping? Like, Canada, there's, the snow's going to come, there's all these things. And I was like, the minute I start stressing about all that is like when I stop enjoying that I have the flexibility to stop and take a nap. And again, that's the beauty of hiking by myself. It's like, it's only me deciding when I'm going to do these things. And just, I really tried on the CDT to savor it, even to the end. I was tired. I was ready to be done. But the end is Glacier National Park, which is absolutely stunning. And so I did slow down because I wasn't quite ready to go back to whatever, the real world or the fake world or whatever it is.
Yeah, we don't know what it is, but it's out there.
Yeah. This alternate reality.
Oh, man. That is so... Have you ever met a thru hiker that's like, you know what? Thru hiking's not that cool. Because I haven't met them. And I always tell people, I'm like, you will never meet a thru hiker that will be like, yeah, it's just not for me. Like... They always have a smile on their face. I mean, you don't want to ask them really early on in their first trail or maybe like at the end of a big climb or something. There might be a moment of time where you don't want to ask them that. But when they're done with the trail and they're reflecting back at the end of the trail, I've yet to meet anyone who says, yeah, I would never suggest this.
Yeah, I definitely have met people who said I would never do it again.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes this happens when you pre-plan, I'm going to hike the trail with this particular person or couples. Yeah. Sometimes I see couples and one person is totally into it and the other person is sort of being dragged along and is not really, this is just not where they would choose to be, but their relationship is more important than that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, and there's times, you know, I've gotten sick. I've gotten injuries. In fact, I tried to hike the Tahoe Rim Trail this fall, and I didn't finish. I had foot problems, both feet. I was trying to hike, and I usually hike a lot in sandals, and I went from Chacos to Lunas, and that did not work. And I just, it sucked. But you just kind of have to roll with it and remember why you're out there.
Yeah.
After I had some really painful days, I actually bought new shoes in South Lake Tahoe. I got back out and I was like gimping down the trail and I thought, it doesn't matter. I'm here and this is gorgeous. And yes, I'm not going to finish because I have somewhere to be and I don't have enough time now. But that didn't matter.
If you think of the person that you were, how you looked at hiking when you started the AT versus now, how you view mileage and how you view the traveling of hiking. Do you see a difference or have you noticed a mind shift? Like if you could go back and watch yourself hike the early stages of the AT, what would be different about how you're viewing the hike?
Right. I think I really went in, I did a good job of going into the AT with no expectations. And I think I learned that from the PCT or from the Peace Corps. I could never have expected or prepared myself for that experience. It was really just jumping in feet first and figuring it out. And that's kind of how I approached the AT was, I don't know, I'm just going to do it and figure it out when I'm out there. But I do remember just the mileage. You know, I did maybe 10 miles a day to start and last or 16 on the ODT, I did my first 40 miler. And I was wow, I could have fathomed doing that on the AT. But it's just, there's always little ways that you can challenge yourself or try to take it to the next level or keep yourself interested. So I'm not really sure how my style has changed. I mean, like I said, lots of gear has changed, but I like to think think I still approach it in a similar way. And I set out with the things I need to be able to figure it out when I'm there. But the minute I try to expect or prepare what I'm going to experience, you know, those expectations mm-hmm. are going to be disappointments. You know, yeah. it's like nothing. You have to just get out there.
Man. Oh, man. Yeah, my brain's all firing with all. I could probably talk your ear off like all afternoon. You just never get the opportunity. You don't get the opportunity every day to talk to someone that's done so much and is so involved in the hiking community.
I really feel lucky that I've found what I enjoy to do, yeah. And that I've been able to make it a career. There's definitely times when, you know, you hear folks that say, "Don't do what you love for work, because then you'll end up hating it." Mm-hmm. I feel lucky that I still love it, but it is tricky to sometimes know where my personal life stops and work begins, because it's all kind of one thing.
Yeah.
But that's also exciting. It's like it's an opportunity to really dive deep into this and really, really see what you can do, especially, you know, developing a route. I just keep getting deeper and deeper. Now I'm working on like a skills progression and a skills rating. And it seems like there's always more I can go and do to try to help people figure out how to get out there. And then also to engage with the world around them.
Yeah.
So what I did in grad school is I studied museum exhibition design. And I really liked the idea of creating a three-dimensional space that someone can learn from. And so now I'm actually seeing that the Oregon Desert Trail is my museum exhibit, and I'm facilitating someone's journey through a landscape. And I would love that if they can come away with it having learned something about that place or the animals or the geology or the Native Americans who used to live there. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's stretching yourself, challenging yourself. That makes it exciting.
That is awesome. Well, the images of the trail are stunning. I'm starting to feel this weird pull towards the desert trail. I don't know why, but like every once in a while there's an idea that like pops in my head, and I'm telling you, it's like this weird thing. It's like, Emery, you need to go and explore this area. Like, you need to try it. And I don't know if it's because I am comfortable off trail. I feel like my body did pretty well in the desert. I know a lot of people don't, their bodies just do not do well in the desert, but I did okay. And so maybe it's a little bit of that, but there's something about that region, the canyon. There's these just anytime. Just for those listening, just Google this region, and it's very stunning. What is the? I guess one of the last questions before I let you go. What's the future? What do you see as the future of the Oregon Desert Trail? And you've kind of touched on it, but what are you trying to avoid, and what are you wanting to? How are you looking to protect this area? I would imagine you're wanting to avoid maybe some established trails. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I think that it's still somewhat unknown. If this is just explodes and there's thousands of people wanting to get out there, we're going to have human-created, hiker-created impacts quickly. But if it's a modest growth, and I really, through the materials, try to encourage people to be smart, think about your impacts, disperse travel. It's actually, I tell people to spread out, don't follow footprints. We don't want to create trail. Just how to be respectful in traveling in these landscapes. So my hope is that it will remain as rugged and remote as it is now. Maybe there are some opportunities to do some road to trail conversions, all these dirt roads, but those are questions I'm working on with my agency partners. What's best for the landscape? What's best for this route? But also because this was created by a conservation organization, there's a lot that people can sink their teeth into learning about the policy that happens in the management of these lands and how those plans are made and how they can have a role in the future of these public lands. So I'd love the future just to get more people engaged in those issues and start paying attention to the lands that we hike through on trails. I will be the first to admit on the PCT and the AT, I had no clue what forest I was in, what national forest I was in. It was just I was just walking a trail. But I challenge people to start paying attention to what makes these trails possible.
Maybe that's a good way to end it. How can people get in touch with your organization, and what's the best way to support what you guys are doing?
Yeah, our website is onda.org, and you can look up the Oregon Desert Trail. It's really almost a website within a website. There's so much information.
Okay.
So we don't actually have a separate trail organization. It's all housed. I'm very fortunate to have a full-time job paid for by this organization, conservation organization. So becoming a member, that would be a great way. If you do head out on the trail, keep track of water sources. That's a huge one to help hikers out, and there's lots of information on how to do that. But I think getting out there, just go for the weekend, go for the week. Let me know what you think. I love feedback. This is definitely a work in progress and lots of little tweaks here and there. So, just go.
Cool.
That would be my advice.
I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your time. I feel like this episode might be embody like the idea of what I'm trying to accomplish here with the podcast. I mean, the idea is to create a community of like knowledge where people can come and be like, hey, cool, I'm going to hear from Renee, or I'm going to hear from this company over here, and hopefully one day create that, like just pull bits and pieces of information aside and adapt it to what they want. Because like you said earlier on the episode, everyone has their own style. Just pull different things in depending on what you want to use. And I think you've touched on a number of different things with the organization, your hiking style, and where you came from and your whole background and stuff like that. I think this episode's super cool for me I'm really excited to put it out, and I appreciate you kind of diving into that with me.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, and I'll know it hits home when I see you out on the Oregon Desert Trail.
Well, trust me.
It's a challenge.
It's on my list. I at least have to do a section of it because I've been super interested in the pack rafting. I am not built to, I've realized I'm not built to sit behind a desk, and that's kind of what I do for work. And I'm hoping one day I can follow in your footsteps and turn my passion into, I just, you know, doing, you know, getting paid to do what I love to do. So, man, yeah, also an inspiration to know that it's actually doable.
Right on. Yeah, good. Well, I look forward to seeing that happen.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
That is it for episode 28. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast and sharing your day with me. It's well appreciated. If you have any questions for me, you can reach me at byland.co. And if you want to reach Renee, I will include links to her websites in the show notes of this episode, so be sure to check those out. If you're headed out for the weekend, be safe. If you're on an adventure now, be safe. Enjoy it. Soak it in. And always strive to get better. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.